You okay?
He's my brother. I have to find out what they're gonna do.
Wait, Vid. Wait. If Ram thinks for one moment you're on Jay's side, you're going to go down with him. What's done is done. Look at me. If Ram's not going to last, he goes off to cyber heaven. Who takes over here? You, Vid. You're his natural successor.
You think?
Sure. There'd only be Ebony to worry about, but we could take care of her. As long as Jay isn't around.
So welcome to Series 4, Episode 43 of Conversation on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hello.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 4, Episode 43. The screenplay was done by Tony Osborne. It was directed by Costa Boats. And the episode synopsis read out by Sabine.
A thief in our midst has the mall rats on edge as they desperately wait for news about Jay and Patch. Ebony's loyalty is tested, and Rem finds a way to kill two birds with one stone.
So I'm going to surprise everyone and tell you that I enjoyed this episode.
Oh, wow.
No, you're not alone. I watched it and I thought, you know what? Comparatively, this wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Really wasn't.
Interesting. I thought there were some good bits on it. But
Yeah. It was suddenly like character beats and consequences and things happening. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
By
welcome back, Tony.
Yeah. Such an improvement.
Yep. My actual thought was, this isn't a bad episode. Too bad it doesn't, you know, fix what it's surrounded by, but yeah. On its own, in its own little bubble, it's actually fine. And I was like, and I could hear Tamsin's voice in my head, and I go, yes, I know the bar is in hell, but it's not bad.
It's not bad. It's
no, not
great
bad.
Stuff in here. Like, obviously, so yeah, surrounded by
it can't save anything, but it's okay on its own.
But is that even more, a little bit more disappointing? Because you do feel like, I wish we'd had more of this earlier on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I thought, I felt like, as Lance had said, there's some good character beats. And you're like, wow, too bad they don't really matter because, you know, the characters are so inconsistent from one episode to another. And so I did feel that way. Like, oh, that's a shame because this is actually pretty decent. And it makes me wish, like, there were some moments where a character would be a certain way in the episode, and I feel like, gee, I wish you'd been like this the whole time. I might actually care about your story.
But here we are, episode 43, and the wheels are just turning. I guess it's an improvement on season 3, because season 3 had a lot of plot in the beginning. Then when we got to episode sort of 43, the wheels were spinning. Now they've obviously thought, well, let's get to episode 43 and actually do some plot. We've not done anything and we'll start doing some character stuff now. We'll switch it.
It is weird comparing the two because, you're right. Season three, was a mess, the back end. But season four, because the characters change every single episode, nothing matters. It's like, pick your poison kind of things. I don't know.
I would say season 3 is more character driven, and so like you can almost forgive the messy plot and you know how crazy it gets and how it's just like, oh, okay, geez, this is a hot mess. But it is at least character driven, even towards, you know, even in the end, everything everyone does is based on who they are, what they feel, what motivates them. And I'd say the difference here is that this isn't character driven, but at least something's happening, and it's so simplified. It's at least concise in this episode, and you know, it's not the characters driving the plot, but there is something happening at least. And because it's so simple, it's like, okay,
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Mm. Yes, thank you. I'm like, I ran out of words.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. Yeah. And I think it goes back to what we said before, which is with this series in particular, cause and effect. There's been lots of things that have happened, but the effect has been negligible, let's say. And now we are seeing things. Something happens and then there's fallout. And yeah, things make a bit more sense because we've got, for instance, Celine saying, oh, we've got to make a decision. Do we stay or do we go?
That's the bits exactly I liked in this episode.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And it felt a bit like in series one, when you would have this. So like when Ebony escaped and they kind of have to make decisions around that and they're worried about when the other shoe's going to drop. And yeah, so it's that cause and effect thing. When you're telling a story, if something happens, then something else will obviously, it's like a fork in the road. If you go in one direction, you've got to choose and then it will spiral out into something else. It makes logical sense.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah.
But it does make me laugh that even that is like, we've seen this conversation happen. I think every season has a conversation of the characters discussing whether they should leave the mall. And it made me laugh that this one is still half-assing it because we don't even see the discussion that made them come to the conclusion that they come to. Like, we're in the mall and Celine poses the question, should we leave? And then we pan back to the technos, and when we come back, they've made their decision. It's like, wow, you didn't even give us the discussion.
I actually laughed at that.
What's decided? We're staying. That's amazing.
I was like, you know what, Tony? I'll give you a little pass because so much other things is happening. So I'll give you a pass. You can fit it in. Okay, it's fine.
I mean, what are they going to say that they haven't already said? So,
yeah.
And at least they have the conversation, because earlier in this series in particular, they would not have had the conversation about leaving. They would have just bumbled about as if it was all fine.
Yep. At least they had the conversation.
Yeah.
Even if we didn't hear it.
The conversation was probably like, guys, the plot won't let us leave. So,
so you know, we're stuck here.
So, following on from the last episode's cliffhanger, Jay takes Java hostage in an attempt to make his escape with Patch, but she quickly takes advantage of an opportunity to overpower him, with only Patch managing to make it out.
Patch, you're alive!
So's Ram. They kidnapped me to try and save him. I didn't think he was gonna live, but then he did, and Jay tried to stage a coup.
Is Jay okay?
I don't know. He didn't get out.
As yeah, what'd you make of the resolution to last episode's cliffhanger?
I liked it. I thought it was actually filmed in an energetic way. And, you know, I thought it was easy to follow the action beats. It didn't seem silly. Like, often when they're holding somebody hostage and you're like, the way they're holding him, like, you're telling me you couldn't get out of that? I felt maybe the tight corridor worked in its favor and it made it more plausible the way they moved around each other, the way Jay was able to grab Java and the way she was able to reverse on him, how Patch, you know, that gave Patch the opportunity to get away. I thought it was blocked well and they used the space to their advantage. And again, I liked the energy, the pacing of the scene. It worked for me.
So I've just got one question and I think I blinked. And maybe I missed this. But last week we ended on the cliffhanger and there were supporters of Jay behind him, other technos, with their zappers ready to zap. What happened to them?
They quickly turned as soon as they saw Ram was alive.
Right, okay. I blinked and I must have missed it.
It's like they were on Jay's side only because they thought Ram was dead anyways and Jay was going to grab power. But at the end of the day, they will choose Ram over Jay.
Mm.
At least at this point in time.
It was an interesting scene though, and with Java, she was so smug and she kind of walked straight into that. with Jay?
I have to say, it's probably the only time I think the zapper felt remotely intimidating. Mm. Him holding her and having it to her neck. I don't know if it's just because the actors were selling it. Mm. But it's very clear Jabba did not want to be shot with that thing at close range. And and again, because of the way he was holding her, he didn't have to do that goofy looking awkward wrist movement or anything like that. Mm. I think that looked like, oh, that actually looks like a dangerous situation. You know, the weaponry looked threatening for once.
Yeah, it did in this scene.
And I think it's a good thing that at least they didn't let Jay get away, because that would have been way too easy if he would have just walked in, gotten Patch, and got away scot-free.
Yeah, but I kind of feel like that's what's going to happen anyway, and this whole episode felt like a way of dragging it out without having to actually execute him.
But at least there's a... I agree, I understand what you're saying there, but I... We know they can't execute Jay. We know he's not going anywhere. Yeah, mm-hmm. And when a character's in that sort of situation where the bad guy has every reason to get rid of them and doesn't, I just need a decent reason for why. And I will say, I feel like this episode, the writing, at least I believe that Ram would let him go because of his plan. You know what I mean? Like, I buy it. I buy that this is what Ram would want. He doesn't want to get rid of him right away because he wants to know who helped Jay do all this. And once he's convinced that Jay did it on his own, it's so in Ram's wheelhouse to let him go the way he does.
I mean, I agree with you. I agree with Sabine. I think, yeah, it makes sense. I just think as if you were... I think it's because I've got hindsight and I'm like, oh, I know where this is going, and it's frustrating. But then I'm not a big fan of Jay either. So, you know,
I mean, it doesn't help that. Was it Jabba let him go before? I know it does feel like you said, these moments just keep letting him go for no reason. But this one I felt like justifiable to me, but yeah, I do. Get
I mean, I think it's interesting as well how Fed comes forward to kind of stand up for Jabba, and he's the one that says, oh no, she was here by your bedside the whole time. And yeah, I think that's interesting. It just goes to show what an interesting character he is yet again, and how so frustrating when you know that he's going.
Yeah. There's so much you can attribute to what his motives as to why he would stand up for Jabba. I mean, at the end of the day, there's not much reason for him to do it, especially when you consider his end goal. His end goal is to get Chloe back. Ram's alive, you know, awake and capable. Now Ved just needs to work on him to get the answers he wants. He doesn't need Jabba so much for that. And so the fact that he still chooses to back her, it is an interesting thing to know about Ved. It could be that the glasses that he used to wear as he looked at Ram and worshipped him have completely fallen away by this point. He's disenchanted by Ram. You know, he still has moments where he's impressed with Ram's genius, but he's pretty done with Ram. And I do like that story progression of Ved, and the fact that he would take a moment to protect someone from Ram that he doesn't even need to protect. It doesn't really serve him to protect her, but he chooses to do it anyway. Says a lot of how far he's come in his opinion of Ram.
I think it does serve him in some way, though. At least in my opinion, for Ved to stick up for Jabba would be a smart thing, because he doesn't want Jabba as his enemy. That's like, Seek can turn on him in any second and just say, no, 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 it wasn't me, it was Ved. He's best off sticking with her at this point in time in order to get what he wants.
Yeah.
Because together they can go for, no, 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 Ram, we did everything to save you, and get in his good graces as far as he can. So, you know, he has a better chance of getting the information on Chloe that he desperately wants.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I liked how they actually... The scene was framed with Ved and Jabba standing together I thought that was quite interesting because they're not just backing each other up, but they're also physically kind of standing together as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think it's interesting that Ram automatically thinks that Jay coming out of the woodwork was a response to someone inside the Technos having kind of told him all this stuff. But we see the Technos drinking at the bars, they're going into the city. A lot of them know that something is wrong, and it just feels it wouldn't take a lot for someone like Jay, who had once been so high up in the Technos, to put together maybe Ram is decommissioned. I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it.
Jay?
Jay and putting things together is not...
Yeah, that's not what I would say.
Yeah, but come on, like, the writers want us to think that Jay is this master of tactics and things like that. Like, we know he isn't because we watch the show, right? But they make it as if he is, like he's some great general who's done, like, the invasion of the city and things like that. And we know that he basically doesn't do anything until about 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and then he'll do one thing and that'll be quite badly done.
Yeah, but at this point in time, there weren't a lot of people within the Technos who knew how serious Ram's condition was.
Yeah, that's true.
That's like, Java tried to keep it as secretive as he could, and, you know, well, eventually that ended up with Ved helping her.
Mm.
But outside of that, yeah, Mega knew something was up, but not a lot of them knew or actually knew.
Well, see, I think that's the one flaw with the scene. As much as I did like the scene, I think the flaw is that it's not made clear to us exactly what Java and Ved have told Ram about what's going on. And so when he confronts Jay and says, I want to know who helped you with this, I was thinking this afternoon was, what do you mean? It's just, what do you mean? What do you think Jay has done aside from come in here and rally some of your technos and convince them that you're dead? Why would you assume that there's like there, that? What else do you think he's done? And that you need to find out who has helped him do it. What is the thing that Jay had help doing aside from coming in, telling the other technos, I think Ram is dead, let's go, and confronting them? And so I do think that is a flaw in the dialogue, because it's like, what exactly does Ram think Jay has done that he would need help with that, aside from assuming Ram was dead? Like, why would you think that someone had to help Jay come to that conclusion, and he's got to torture Jay to find out who it was? You know what I mean? Like, I do think that is a flaw in the storytelling. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. To me it came across as Ram wanting to know, like, assuming Jay was staging a coup and trying to overthrow him, not fully realizing the extent of how Jay's mind works, but or doesn't work.
And see, it would help if we knew that, for example, if Java and Ved had told him about the raid on the medicines, stuff like that, then when you have Jay waltz in, you know, with a posse of technos saying that Ram is dead, then you could be like, okay, Jay's been you could understand Ram assuming Jay is behind all of that, who helped him. You know what I mean? But it's like, because it's not made clear to us what Ram knows about what's been happening while he's been taking a nap, I'm like, what do you think Jay has done aside from assume you're dead and convince other technos that you're dead? Because you don't need an accomplice to think someone's dead. So I was like,
it seemed more like Jay was trying to seize control while thinking Ram was dead. And I think for Ram, it's more the audacity of him trying to seize control, no matter if he's dead or not.
I mean, I think all those people that helped Jay, those other technos, I mean, if I was Ram, I'd get rid of a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not trustworthy, are they? The first sign of you on your deathbed, and they've gone over to the opposition.
Yeah, he could have relocated them to, you know, any other spot where they could be useful. and not help
no,
Joy.
No, I'm afraid, Sabine, we just need to press delete on all of them. All five of them. They've got to go.
Send them to the mines, the islands.
Yeah. You're sacked. Get out.
Back at the mall, Ginny tells Dee that a quarter of the medical supplies have gone missing. Having earlier seen Siva acting suspiciously, she goes to Celine and the pair accuse her of theft. While Siva does admit to taking some ointment for her militia recruits, she is angry at the confrontation and Lex suggests Celine look closer to home.
So where are you going to go? Back to the hotel? Or the farm?
I don't care. I'll find somewhere, but I'm not staying here to be called a thief.
What's the big deal? People call me stuff all the time.
That's different.
Why?
Because in your case, most of it's true, but I am not a thief.
See, panel, what do you think about the air of mistrust throughout this episode and the spark of the old Lex?
So there is so much I actually enjoyed in these scenes because I think that it reopens something that's been going on for quite a long time, which is who Siva is, her place in the mall, and the fact that we don't really vote on mall rats anymore and how they kind of use that against her all the time, that Lex brought her here, there was no decision taken. And I like later on Lex kind of uses that against Dee because he basically says to her, well, who are you? You're as new as she is. And so I really like that part of the scene. And like you say, there's so much distrust towards Siva, which is kind of understandable. But at this point, she hasn't done anything that would lead them to believe that A, she's a spy, or B, she's not on the level with this. I mean, she has been living with Lex in that grotty little room for what feels like months, what must have been months. I mean, if this is cover, this is deep cover. She's in deep character right now. And I really like that. I also loved the way that May, in the back of the shot, when Pride says it's not him, he didn't do it. I love her sarky, the look on her face, the smile. She can barely contain her glee as she watches him lie to Celine's face. It's just brilliant. I loved it. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for once, it's not her getting accused.
Mm.
It's like she must have been happy about that, that the thoughts were immediately, oh, something went missing. Must have been Pride out of these two addicts. Must be Pride. But yeah, as for them accusing Siva instantly, my mind just goes to the fact that in the beginning, when Siva just moved in, Jay didn't trust her either. And since everything Jay says is golden, I can imagine that might have played a part in their minds.
I still think they could have done better leading up to, if they had done more with Siva here at the mall, so that it would be believable that there has been this air of distrust towards Siva by the others, especially since none of them have seemed to have much of a problem with her, for the most part. You know, and it doesn't help that Siva's behavior has been so non-suspect this entire time. She hasn't shown any interest in what the mall rats do, how they make decisions. I mean, the girl just spends all day cooking, cleaning, washing things. You know, even when they asked her to help, when they wanted to get her involved in their agenda, she didn't jump at the chance to do that. She's like, I don't know. I kind of like this domestic life where it's just me and my man. I've never had that before, you know. And so I just don't think they've built up to D being so quick to be like, oh, Siva's the one who's not trustworthy around here, you know. It felt a little like, okay, so you guys, you're all quick to believe this about her. I don't think you did a good job in showing that that's how you've all felt about her in the past, you know, that you've been this whole time just tolerating her presence. And I don't think there's anything in her behavior that justifies this jump to, it's her. She's the untrustworthy one. She's the one who's been caught out lying or something. And I mean, I understand, you know, Celine wanting to believe that. I mean, she immediately thought it was Mouse when her jewelry first went missing. And I even understand Dee in a way that her headspace, she's not thinking straight. She's worried about Patch. She's exhausted. She hasn't been sleeping. She's just been working in the hospital wing. And, you know, she's already irritated. But I just don't think they did a good enough job to set up the Mallrats to be so quick to think that about Siva, given how the story's been progressing, Siva at the mall, and how everyone's been treating her at the mall. I think that could have used a little work. It's great in this episode, but when you think of the episodes that led up to it, I'm like, that feels like it came out of nowhere, that she's your first suspect, you know? Given that all of you are drop-in refuge, you know? And so that could have used a little work, I think, to prepare us for this.
It could have been so simple, you know. It's like, at the end of the day, she is one of Ebony's sisters. She was a techno. She's a sister to, you know, the most untrustworthy person they know. They could have at least played with that.
I wonder if it's also a bit of hangover from when Dee was interested in Lex and she was a bit jealous of Siva.
Yeah, possibly.
But see, this is a consequence when you don't take the time to explore how the characters are feeling at any given time, that you're not laying the groundwork for how their feelings can lead to moments like this, where that could have been sprinkled into dialogue this whole time Siva's been at the mall, how people feel about her presence, aside from Pride just freaking out over everything. His opinion doesn't even count, you know, but we don't know. We don't even know how Celine truly feels about Siva. You know what I mean? Like, there's just no dialogue about how these characters truly feel about anything, how they're truly reacting internally to all of this stimuli, all of these things happening around them. They talk about action. They talk about the plot, but they don't really talk about their feelings. So when a moment like this comes out, and, you know, Dee jumps at the chance to accuse Siva of stealing. And it's not because she saw her take something from the medical supplies. It's, she accuses Siva with an anger, you know, like, I've always known you weren't trustworthy. And it's like, you've never shown that. You have never expressed a distaste for Siva's presence or her as a person since she's been here. But if they had, you know, expressed what Dee feels, how she feels about the situation, living in the mall, how she feels about the people in the mall, we wouldn't be surprised. We would have seen this coming. We'd be like, oh yeah, we know that Dee doesn't like her, or we know she has lingering jealousy, or whatever. But because they never take the time to explore any of these characters as people, moments like this don't hit the way they should. It would be much more poignant if we already knew that both Dee and Celine have these feelings of distrust towards Siva, and they're just trying to deal with it. You know, even if Celine had at some point expressed she doesn't really trust Siva, she's not comfortable with her being there, but she has pity for her or something, and that's why she's taking her in. Even maybe compare it to herself. There was a time that, you know, she could be like, I wasn't trustworthy once upon a time. I have stolen from my tribe. I have lied, you know, and I was given chances, and I want to give this girl a chance despite her past. Anything, so that when this moment comes and Siva is unfairly accused of stealing, we'd at least understand why, you know, Celine and Dee feel this way, why Lex is the only one who stands up for Siva, you know. But we don't know how any of these people feel about anything, really. And so it's like, where the frick did that come from, Dee? Why do you hate Siva today?
Yeah,
I freaking loved Lex coming in, backing up Siva. Just felt like the old Lex, like, nobody speaks to my girl that way. I will, but nobody else would dare do that. That's Lex. And I was like, yeah, welcome back.
Yeah, I did like that too.
Did anyone else think that Lex, I know he said about her being a thief, you know, I wouldn't care even if you were, but did anyone else think, is that because, like, not just because obviously she's your girlfriend, but since KC's been gone, you've had a vacancy for a pickpocket?
Yep.
And again, that could have been a great moment if we knew how Lex felt about anything, really. I did like him telling her that, though. I it felt so on brand for old Lex. You know, somebody who knows what it's like to walk the shady side, and he doesn't have this like straight arrow moral compass. You know what I mean? And for him to say, it was actually kind of romantic in a weird way for him. He's basically saying, I accept you. You know, you don't have to be perfect. And again, this would work so well if we explored his distaste for her domesticity, you know, and that what he liked about her is that she was a little gray and a little dirty, you know what I mean? But because we miss out on all of that.
We had a little bit of that last week, didn't we? When he was saying, I don't need you to cook and clean for me. So there was an element of that, but it wasn't, it needs a bit more work. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Like, why don't you need her to do those things for you? Why, what is it? Why does that trigger you? Is it because it reminds you of something from the past? Is it because that's not the side of her you wanted? You know, like, why?
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's kind of romantic him saying, even if you were a thief, I wouldn't have a problem with it, you know? So it's like, this episode is full of moments that you're like, I just wish they were in a better story, you know?
Yeah. I also loved the way that you could double view him not wanting the room searched was A, because he shares it with Siva, and also like, how dare they search their room, but also, please don't search my room because you'll find all the stuff I've actually stolen.
And I liked Siva being like, go ahead and search my room, I ain't got nothing to hide. You know, I thought Siva's feelings of just being like, you know what? I have done nothing but keep your mall clean and wash your clothes. I haven't done anything since I've been here. And you have the audacity to accuse me of stealing. I was like, that's right, girl. Stand on business. She's like, check my room. Go for it.
Skipping on ahead a bit with Siva, I always thought it was crazy the way she kind of left the mall rats during season 5, but then you see stuff like this and you're like, no, of course she did. Of course she left them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I loved how in this episode she was like, you know what? I'm leaving. And Lex is trying to talk her out of it without going into why he really doesn't want her to go. And she's like, I don't care. I will stay anywhere but in a place where people will accuse me of this, you know? And it's just nice because it's like a little bit of foreshadowing of when Siva will find her feet. Here's a spark of it. She's not asking Lex to take her away. She's not asking him to save her and swoop her off to someplace better. She, in this moment, is willing to strike out on her own, even though there's no safe harbor for her, you know? And I was like, oh, we get a little taste that it was there. It was there, you know? Mm. And because she knew aspects of herself. And it's a nice moment for her. I like that.
Makes a nice change from the girl who screamed bloody murder in the barn.
That was just a blip. I mean, she went from sleeping like a king size to sleeping in a barn. We've all been there. Hysterical.
And pride lying to Celine's face and playing the emotional manipulation. The way he says, are you saying you don't believe me? I need you to say you believe me. It's so sickening. Mm. Because again, we're reminded of how easily pride can lie to you, you know, and how sincerely he can lie to you. And it's topped off by May smiling about it in the background. It's so sinister. Like, she is just enjoying this way too much. I do think it's interesting seeing this change in May. See, unlike Pride, where they didn't do the change very well, he's just been an a-hole all of season 4. I can see the distinct change in May compared to who she was before the Technos got their hands on her and tortured her. Like, this, that May wanted a home. She wanted a family. She wanted people to trust and care about her, even though she knew she was toxic AF and they probably shouldn't. She did long for it, you know? This May comes back. She's so cynical and doesn't care about these people. She doesn't think of them as her family, you know, and she's not concerned about them being harmed or hurt in any real way. She doesn't care about their feelings. She's putting on a billboard face whenever she has to. But whenever no one's looking at her, you see this sinister look in her eyes, a disdain for the mall rats in her eyes. And I think that's far more effective in showing what that torture did to May, because that's not who she was. She wasn't a malicious person. She was a bad seed. She was a bad egg, but she didn't really go out of her way to harm people. Unless she was trying to save herself, you know? And I think it's just very effective in seeing what the technos did to May.
I think it's not just what the technos did to May, though. It's the simple fact that they didn't come and look for her.
Yeah, Pride just moved on. You know, she knows she's clearly aware that he lied to her and then took up with her friend. And neither of them have had a conversation with her about it. Like, there's not been a conversation between Pride and May about what happened between them. Nothing. Like, and so you can just see it in May's face. She's like, I don't really care what happens to any of you.
Yeah. They didn't care about her, so why should she?
I also thought it was a nice moment where you had Celine in the office and she was looking at a photo of Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, well, Ryan would have never stolen from her. He wouldn't have treated her the way...
No, but it was a photo of her on her wedding day to Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
And it does make you wonder if, now, like, reading into it, if she wasn't necessarily thinking about Ryan, but she was thinking about the way that she manipulated him.
Mm.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Because
that's
what she's getting now.
That's what I'm saying. Like, because we don't explore how these characters are feeling about anything, we can only speculate what that's all about and what's going on in Celine's mind and the emotional turmoil she's suffering, because we just don't know.
Mm.
I mean, you could look at that scene and be like, oh, maybe she's just reminiscing about the good old days, you know, conveniently forgetting how horrible that day actually was for her because she didn't want to marry Ryan. You know what I mean? Like, when you think about it, that was a horrible day for Celine. She was miserable the entire day. What if she was looking at that picture and remembering how easily she was able to lie to his face and say, I do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's just so many
so many ways you could take that,
She could be thinking and looking at these pictures, but we will never know because they won't take the time to let these characters express what they're feeling.
Mm.
Like, when I initially saw her looking at the photo, I thought it was because of the thing from the previous episode of the missing earrings that she used on a wedding day. I thought it was connected to that, but then you could see it so many different ways. Like, I lied to my husband's face. Like, is he lying to me? Do I actually really trust Pride? Like, you could see it 100 different ways, but we don't get no insight into Celine.
Right, the closest person to you can lie to you, you know, but because she's been that person, she has done it to another person who didn't deserve that being done to them, you know? And, but we don't know if that's what she was thinking. She could have been thinking about the earrings. No. It could be that shallow, you know?
And I get, like, I hate how stupid they make Celine. Like, are you really going to trust May backing up Pride? Really? Like, that, really? This is, what endorsement, ringing endorsement is that? Like, come on.
And just a simple fact, she's been lied to by Pride before.
Yeah, he's already, like, lied to her.
Yeah, but like season 3.
Yep.
She got locked up because he
made, we don't talk about that.
Girl, this man's been lying to you since the day you met. again, I will say I do like that despite him using that emotional manipulation on her, she doesn't say, I trust you. Like, notice that. That's not what comes out of her mouth. She doesn't say anything. I do think that's actually kind of an important character beat. She doesn't say it. She doesn't allow herself to be emotionally manipulated into saying what he wants to hear to protect his feelings. And yeah, I did like Lex confronting Pride, you know, again, in this, it's just in the bubble of this episode. And it did feel like a touch of the old Lex. I mean, Caleb feels more awake in this episode. Like, he likes what he's doing, what he has to say, how he has to perform, and is really putting his all into it. And I still think everyone's being too nice to Pride, and the narrative is trying so hard to make it not his fault. And I'm like, nah, this is just him. The game may have made it worse, but this is just him. I did like him setting him straight about it.
With Java adamant that Ebony must have been working with Jay, Ebony is arrested on her return to the hotel. She acts relieved at Ram's return, and he is soothed, blaming himself for letting her get too close when she was ill, but tests her by giving her responsibility for Jay's interrogation.
He was helped. I know he was. I need names, Ebony. You'll conduct this interrogation.
What?
I said shut up.
Which she plays up for the camera and her watching husband. So yeah, what'd you make of Ebony's show?
I like it. It was a nice touch of the Ebony we know, playing along. And I even thought it was a cute moment when she's in the room. And because her back is to the camera, she mouths, I'm sorry. Felt like an Ebony thing to do. She went all in on the torture. Like, I believe she did it, you know, and she doesn't want to, but it has to be done. And I did like that moment of understanding between she and Jay. You know, she's letting him know, I'm not betraying you, but I've got to do this, you know, and he got that, you know, and he's like, okay, this is gonna freaking hurt. Do what you gotta do, you know. And so I did like that moment of solidarity between the two of them. I like how she played Ram. I do think it's interesting. Like, I wonder what it is, like, of the wives, why does he disdain Java so much? You know, like, even after hearing that Java stayed by his side and tried to keep him alive and fought to keep him alive, he's still being such a douche to her. I'm like, what is it about Java that you don't like? And then Ebony just comes in simpering. And
she's too easy. She says yes.
Yeah, maybe that's it. He never had to fight for her.
I think that's what it is.
She's so available. She's so desperate.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, I really liked the fact that for Ebony, this is, it's a really difficult situation. And we've never really seen her in a situation like this before. Because, like, she was in love with Bray, but Bray was not in love with her. And the first time she has somebody who reciprocates the feelings that she has, and she has to keep herself safe, there's little she can actually do for him. And it's interesting, like you say, the way she plays the scene with the I'm so sorry May thing, and she feels bad, you can tell, but she also needs to keep herself alive.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because it did remind me of the moment when she was torturing Bray way back in season one, trying not to go too hard because she obviously wants to keep him alive and follow him back to the mall. It's like, it's interesting. That's all I'm going to say. It's interesting.
Interesting. And it says something. She doesn't actually want to hurt Jay. And we see what drives her to do it. She has to keep herself alive. And this is a dangerous situation. If Ram has any inkling, which she suspects he does, because why else would he put her in the room with Jay? It's not like he doesn't know about them. And Ebony is aware of all of this. She knows she's got to toe this line. She's got to play it so carefully. But she doesn't want to hurt Jay. But you could argue she wanted Bray to be hurt. Not killed or anything like that, but she wanted him punished because he ran off, like, because they weren't together anymore. Often she did want Bray hurt sometimes because he didn't return her affections, because he didn't come crawling back to her. You know, she liked to hurt him emotionally. You know, it was just, like, interesting to see her difference in the way her treatment of someone who does reciprocate her feelings that she loves and someone who doesn't reciprocate those feelings. She put Bray through so much claiming to love him, but think of all the torturous things she put him through emotionally and physically. You know, that was someone she loved. That was her first love. And the things she was willing to do to him, the people she was willing to hurt that she knew he cared about. And yet with Jay, he does reciprocate her love. And she wouldn't do those things to him. She doesn't do those things to him.
And I also like the way that for once Jay played along.
Yeah.
I think they both knew though that if Ebony didn't do this, Ram's response would have been worse.
Yeah. But it shows that
both to her and to him.
And it shows what he's prepared to go through to keep her safe.
Yeah, it's one of the few moments where Jay is protecting someone who actually feels genuine. This is one of those few episodes. Like, his immediate get Patch out of there, you know, at sacrifice of himself, felt genuine. His taking this torture because it'll keep Ebony alive, because otherwise they're both just going down. And Jay already knows, I'm already in trouble. I'm not taking her down with me. It's one of the few times where Jay is doing something heroic and it feels genuine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And even with the Patch thing, you could read that as an Ebony. He's trying to tip Ebony off. Because where's Patch going to go? He's going to go to the mall. They're going to tell Ebony's going to find out. And she will be some way pre-warned. So it's not just, you could read it in two ways again. It's not just about saving Patch. It's also about saving Ebony.
And himself.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know about that. Because as far as Jay's concerned, this is the end of the road for him.
Because there are other scenes that'll come up later season and where Jay does something heroic for someone, but it doesn't feel sincere. It just feels like the narrative trying to shove it down our throats that Jay's really not a selfish a-hole. You know what I mean? But here it felt real, you know?
I mean, does anyone think that Jay thinks that he's going to get out of that room?
No, I don't think so. I don't think he let Patch go in order to hopefully warn the others and maybe they could save him.
Yeah.
I think he is resigned to, I'm in this mess. You know, I don't want anyone else to be in this mess with me.
Mm, yeah, that's what I thought.
And I even, you know what, you guys know I ship them, but I also acknowledge that I don't think this is a healthy relationship. I think it's toxic AF. And I do feel that Jay is using Ebony through most of this relationship. But it's moments like this.
But you can see it. You can actually see the original plan for this couple in moments like this. And it's like, if they had been like this the entire way round, my God.
Yep.
A couple for the ages, you know?
I'm like, there it is. There's the spark.
The thing that might have only happened if Beth hadn't come back.
Yeah, but I mean,
I don't blame it on Beth coming back.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We could go around the houses on
the Amber. Bane.
The thing is, they didn't need to do that.
Yeah, they chose to do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't even make sense that they were like, oh, you know what should be the couple? It should be Jay and Amber. I'm like, okay, let's assassinate her character too while we're at it. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't assassinate her character. It also basically assassinates Bramber.
It just assassinates a whole slot of characters. It's just like, because they were trying to recreate Bramber, you know? And but this little moment, it brings back that spark that I first felt when I saw these two together. And I was like, oh, they're made for each other, you know? But season 5 is going to throw it all away. Because if not for season 5, you could just argue that, okay, season 4, they had some blips in their relationship. But by the end of season 4, like almost the end of season 4, you could be like, nah, these two were made for each other. But then the very last few episodes of season 4, they're like, nope.
Rug pull.
You're like, why though? Why? Why did you do this? Oh my gosh. But this, I think, is a great moment between these two. And I like the way Ebony plays it. And it was like, they're on the same team. And I was like, oh, I love it. I do.
And they deserve each other.
They do.
They absolutely do.
Back at the mall, learning of Jay's capture from Patch, the mall rats, still shaken by the theft, bicker amongst themselves as they contemplate their next move. Should they leave to avoid Ram's inevitable suspicion of them? Remain in the city. As we said, the poignant discussion, however, all takes place off screen. How did you react to the war council?
Well, it was nice that the real world implication of Jay having been captured and them not knowing whether he's going to crack under torture, how long they've got, and they have to decide. Are they going to stay in place and fortify the mall the best way they can? Or are they going to run? Because if Jay cracks, then, I mean, yeah, they're up to it to their neck. So I like that, because as I said in previous episodes, everything would have come out, you know, when they were outside, and Celine and Dee would have been there, and Siva would have been there, and they just would have like let Ebony run past them, and no one would have said anything. It was just for like, oh well, that's an Ebony problem, not an us problem. But it was an us problem, and I liked it.
Well, it's not. It come on. It is it really the tribe if they don't have this discussion at least once a season?
Yeah, but with the rate this season was going, we can appreciate the fact that they actually remember that.
Yeah. It's funny that this is the time they finally decide to have the discussion, but I was just like, yeah, what, you haven't heard this question yet, and I can't believe it's only coming up now.
Why did they not discuss this in the beginning when they realized they weren't going to try to get their friends back? They should have just up and left.
Yeah, the fact that they were like, oh, we're just going to stick this out for no reason whatsoever. But it, for me, I feel like this is just classic tribe bingo, a discussion of whether we should leave them all. And it's like, oh, finally, ding, 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 they finally said it.
We could have turned that into a
every season, yes.
Yay, they finally said it. And again,
that's going to be the game for next season.
It does speak to the laziness of the season that they don't even show us the discussion. I don't know whether to appreciate that or not. I just find that so funny that they don't even have
the discussion.
We don't even get to hear their reasons for why they choose to stick it out. I mean, what? And honestly, at this point, why would they even argue to leave the mall? I mean, you guys have been willing to stay in the city through this entire occupation when you know that you have two friends in the Ecos you could have gone to. You know, you could have retreated from this. You had the opportunity. There was no real reason to keep you here, and you chose to stay. So, I mean, what arguments could anyone have made about actually leaving the mall that we would buy? You know what I mean?
We have running water now. We have a washing machine.
I would love it if it was like, look, we're comfortable. We stayed here when the Chosen were living here. Why would we leave now?
I mean, we've stayed here when there's been an invading tribe that has disappeared. Quite a few of our tribe mates, but also continued to disappear people. But we're just going to stay.
We're just going to stay because clearly, you know, these technos don't want us. So we're safe.
Remember, Celine's a city leader who doesn't lead anybody. Except for the Mallrats. When was the last time you saw her do a city leader thing?
Well, she sat in her office and looked at pictures of her ex-husband. Does that count?
Maybe. Maybe that's making some big city leader decisions right there. Big decision. I love that wasn't even a question. When she mentions should we leave, she doesn't even bring up the fact that she's the city leader.
I genuinely think they've forgotten at this point.
I think they have forgotten. That plot point was just there so she could have her stupid hospital.
And then thank Jay for it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, well, you know, you've got to do that at least once an episode.
Oh yeah, you guys, I do think they've completely forgotten that she's city leader.
Seriously, yeah.
Because I don't know what she's doing. She, like, there's chaos in the streets. We haven't seen her do one CityNet broadcast to talk to these people.
She's just hiding in her tower.
Oh my gosh. But hey, she's keeping the tradition of bad city leaders of the Mallrats. I mean, I hate to say it, but Danny was at least the best at understanding that we're running the city.
Right.
Like, she may have been, like, a psycho about it, but she never forgot that we have to run the entire city. You know what I mean? Like,
I need to speak for Maggie right now. Sorry, who's that?
Because I haven't seen Celine give a speech to the city once, which is so wrong. Because everybody else has gotten a chance to address the city. Yeah. And Celine hasn't had one time where she gets to quell the mob.
Yeah, but to be fair, it would just be generic.
Like, how many speeches did Bray and Amber get?
Yeah, but they got speeches that were well written to some extent. They would give Celine just a generic speech that you'd just be like, oh my god.
Ram writes her speeches, right?
Ebony gets generic speeches. Give Celine a generic
speech.
You should
get one, yeah.
Address the city.
The reds versus blues. Just give her something to do. Like, yeah, come on.
Something. You're telling me that a city leader, she wouldn't go on CityNet to try and quell this chaos?
Right.
No, they forgot. They totally forgot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. I generally don't think it comes back up again. I think they have actually forgotten.
Mm. That's wild. It's one of the only things that's happening with Celine. Goes out with pride, is city leader.
She just washed her hands of it. She's like, I can't even run this mall. I'm busy. I give up. Like, that's so crazy.
City, hospital, what's the difference?
None of the other tribes have come into play where she tries to talk to the other leaders about, like, how do we quell this chaos? You know what I mean? Nothing. They totally forgot. There is no city leader right now. Oh, I'm so sorry, Celine. You deserved better.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder people forget that she was leader.
Well, when the writers forget it, why the hell are the viewers going to remember?
Ved worries about Jay's fate, but Jarva warns him to keep his head down for a little longer, as he's likely to be Ram's successor once he departs for reality space. So yeah, just briefly, what do you think of the interaction between Jarva and Ved in this scene?
It makes sense in the storyline that Jarva doesn't love Ram, and she just wants the power. Because that's who she is in this episode. In this episode, Jarva doesn't really care about Ram. She's telling Jay, like, this is what you get for choosing my sister and not me. So it's like, okay, so this is an episode where Jarva wanted Jay the whole time, and she's just riding Ram's back for the power. And now, and she's talking to, you know, Ved about what's going to happen if he goes off. She's clearly not planning on going with him. I would have loved to hear if Ved had told her, you do know he plans on taking us with him. You know that?
Well, she should know that because she was in that actual, she was monitoring the video, wasn't she? So she should know this.
Yeah, but she acted like she had no idea what was happening in the video. She was just like tracking a dot that was Ved, and there's a dot that's Ram, and she's like, keep going, you're getting closer. But it doesn't seem like she was privy to any of the conversation these two were having in their subconscious. But yeah, so it works if that's the storyline we're on. And in this episode, that's the storyline we're on. Jarva doesn't actually care about Ram. She's just there for the power. And so it makes sense that she'd be like, yo, Ved, chill, okay? Because Ram is going off soon, and we will have this whole show to run, okay?
She and Ebony are so alike in that.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that you say what you say, because also, Ved is keeping then this really big piece of information that he's not telling Jarva, which again is like you say, we're all going into reality heaven together.
And I found it believable that because of how they've been doing Ved's story and his disenchantment with Ram, that when he's like shows concerned about what's going to happen to his brother and feels like he needs to do something about it. You know, it's such a jump from who he was in the beginning, where his resentment of his brother overshadowed everything else, you know, but he's reached a point where he knows what Ram is willing to do to people, and he's already done something to someone that Ved cared about. And he takes Ram as a threat far more seriously. He doesn't feel safe. And so I really do like that growth for him. And he had to go through a lot to grow up and see for himself, and it felt sincere, this genuine, like, he's my brother. I have to know what's going to happen to him. I can't just sit back and believe everything's going to work out, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Can I press the missed opportunity button? Because it's the whole Ved, Jay, where we're going with Ved's character, it's just one big missed opportunity. And it's so depressing to watch. I actually find it really painful to watch, because it could have been really interesting. But because you know Dan's fate in the show, it's so frustrating.
It could have been so much better.
Yeah.
Had he just been allowed to stay, it would have been better.
Yes. I feel like Matthew McConaughey stuck behind that bookcase. And I'm like, no.
Don't let me leave, Murph. Don't let me leave. Yeah. Like, Ben, we're trying. We're trying.
But no, I feel like that every time I see him, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Who would have thought at the beginning of this season that we would actually feel this bad about the fact that he's leaving?
I was just about to say that. I was like, who would have thought that I would reach this point in season four and be thinking, I think Ved might get the MVP for this season for me as a character.
Yeah.
I never dreamed that would happen.
I never thought I'd say that.
I never thought it would happen. And the thing is, it's not like I haven't written a season six with Ved and I fixed him according to what I thought would work better for him, you know? And so I know it must have been on some subconscious level that I saw his potential, you know, because I could have easily killed him off in my story just so I didn't have to deal with him. Mm-hmm. But I saw it there, you know, and I continued writing with him. And I never thought I'd be this place where I'd be like, that was the guy. I understand, guys. I understand the fans now. I'm not a Chloe bed shipper, but I get it now. And I who knew? Who knew that I'd be like, that is a great loss. That right there.
And we all feel the same way on this. I think universally, the whole panel feels like this.
Yes.
Which is rare. For all of us. And like, as you said, depending on what way they've written Java, how you can read it is, you know, she's just trying to make the best out of a bad situation. And given the way that Ram treated her in this, and given the way the chips have kind of fallen, and Ebony is back in again, it kind of feels like Ved might be her only option because of the way Ram treated her. Post-recovery.
My gosh, he was such a dog to her. Like, you just heard this woman was by your side fighting to save your life, and you're right back to be like, shut up, Java. Java is literally the Meg of the technos. Like, she just gets dogpiled on. And you know what? I think part of it that makes people feel less sympathy for her is because she's so smug. But I mean, they've forgiven other characters for putting on that mask, you know?
Yeah.
Java doesn't, she's not forgiven for wearing that mask of smugness and confidence and always wanting to get her lick back on everybody, you know? And if she'd been more a humble character, people would feel sorry for her, you know, and recognize how, what a raw deal in many ways she got, you know. I think Java she'll probably win most lost potential.
Yeah.
Like for me, I think Java will win that one.
And it makes sense for her to be smug because her victories are so few and far between that she actually relishes the odd time that she does get one up on somebody.
And, you know, it's so funny when you think about where the story goes, where, you know, spoilers, but how Java ends up teaming up with Mega, you know, if that it seems like that's what was supposed to happen with Ved. They were supposed to team up and, you know, and that would have worked better because there's been no setup for her and Mega to do this. But that's what will happen in season five. We'll find out they've been working together. And I just remember thinking this episode, I'm like, where is Mega, by the way? You introduced him in the weirdest, laziest way possible. And all of his stuff is going down. Where is he? He's going to be so important. Take this time to set him up, will you? It's not till he's going to walk into the mall and be like, hey, I got a plan to get rid of Ram. And Jay's going to be like, you guys should trust him. And it's going to be like, why though? Will you please explain to us who this guy is?
Well, this is a crazy idea, but I'm just going to float it out there. I wonder if that was pickup material because they realized that they actually had shot all this stuff with Mega after Dan had gone and they'd done absolutely nothing to sort of establish who he was. So then they went and did these two isolated pickups and just slapped it in that episode.
Because all of it makes so much more sense if it was Ved.
Yep. Yeah. And, I mean, it's more interesting if it's Ved, let's be honest.
He's the one with the established relationship with Java and Ebony, you know?
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it just... He's the one with the brother that he's got a complicated relationship with. He's the one with all the motivation. Again, I wouldn't trade Mega. I love him, but...
Well, there is still room for Mega in the story, isn't there?
It's absolutely. Just
where you've got the sympathy, you've got Ved having sympathy. You could flip that around, and it's Mega who's in with the technos, but he is sympathetic and has a friendship maybe with Jay. And that's how you could have pivoted it.
Yeah. Or you could have still had the both of them. You could have had the both of them and there being a power struggle within the technos between them, you know? Mm. Oh, there's
Love
just so much
it.
That could have been done. And or it could have been Mega pulling Ved toward the dark side or whatever, you know, anything.
Mm-hmm.
He could have been the Emperor, you know, and Ved is our little Anakin over here.
Yeah, it's so much potential. All right, cool. That brings us to our final thoughts of the episode. So Ram launches a new free game to counter the unrest in the city, with players hunting a virtual Jay. He then later releases Jay from custody, announces that the game has now become real. So yeah, what do you make of Jay's punishment?
I think this is the first truly interesting thing the technos have done with their technology. I actually love this, and it's probably my favorite thing the technos ever do.
Interesting, because I felt the opposite way. I felt very much like, oh God, right, so he's just going to get away yet again, and it's a reason not, because we can't get rid of Jay, so it's a way of not getting rid of him, and yeah, that's how I felt about it. So it's interesting you felt that way.
I don't know, for me, it just felt like a stroke of genius on Ram's behalf. Because if he would get rid of Jay, with the sympathy people have for him, that would make Jay a martyr. But sending Jay out and making him the enemy and having the city do his dirty work for him is so much smarter, because then he won't be a martyr. Then it will just be, okay, that's Jay. We fixed it. We killed him.
But would he be a martyr? Because who actually knows about this apart from the mole rat?
You know how they are, bloody mole rats.
Mm.
They would have. Ebony might have.
This is the thing. Does the sea even know of Jay? Like, why would they even care about him? You know what I mean? Like, he's got no connections. He's not made relations. Like, that's where it falls flat.
I also think it's a bit strange that they keep him in his techno uniform, because we know that there are pockets in the city. We've met these kids who still don't trust the technos, don't want to use the technology.
Right.
And they've kept this guy in his techno uniform. And it's essentially a signal to say that not everything is great in the state of Denmark, i.e. the technos.
Yeah.
Because we're throwing one of our own out and we're just going to allow you to do whatever you want with them. Like, that's a really bad message to send.
Here's a techno target. Yeah. What kind of messaging is this?
I'll tell you why I like it. Every season we get a bad guy. Okay. And the bad guy, if we're lucky, if they're written well, will get one signature move that's so intrinsically them, like no other bad guy would have done that thing. You know, it's so character motivated by who they are, how grandiose, how insane, how egomaniacal they are. So, for example, when you think of like compelling villains in the show, think of Top Hat and how he deals with the Mallrats and his very short run being around. That was so him. It was such a thing that spoke to his way he thought, how off his rocker he really was, the way he invaded the mall, the way he sets a fire and leaves them caged to die of asphyxiation. You know what I mean? Like, it was so him. Nobody else would have thought to do that. Only Top Hat would have been like, well, I'm bored now. Bye. Die. You know, and that was it. And he just left. That was such a Top Hat thing to do. Or, you know, the way the Guardian was like, I'm going to burn Bray at the stake. Who else would have thought of something like that? Only that psycho would have thought to turn it into this spectacle and then to psychologically torture both Trudy and Bray by making her be the one to light the pyre. That was him. That was so him. It was such a him thing to do. You know, this feels like Ram. This just feels like something he would do. Get the city kids hooked on a game, watch the chaos spill, and then to get rid of somebody, make them the enemy in the game, and then send them cluelessly out into the real world, having no idea that they're about to be hunted. That is such a Ram thing. I'm not saying it makes perfect sense. I'm not saying it like great. I'm just saying, like, for me, it works because it's so him. No other villain would have done this or come up with this. It's only Ram could have, you know, and for me, that's why it just like, I love it. You know, of all the things the technos have done with all of their technology, and you're just like, there's so many things you could do that are messed up. And Ram, this little game maker, this little lunatic who wants to be entertained and play with everyone all the time. This was just so him. I freaking love this so much.
It's interesting because I think for me, it could possibly have worked if they had stripped him of his techno garb. But it's just, I don't know if you guys have seen House of the Dragon, but it kind of reminds me of the mistake they make. They cut the head off one of the dragons, and then they bring it through King's Landing, and they show it to the small folk that actually these beasts can be killed. And at the end of the day, they're just like rotting flesh. And it kind of feels like this undermines the sort of power of the technos. If you say, actually, at the end of the day, we're just kids like you, and without our zappers, you can actually just beat us to death with, you know, a spoon if you want to.
I wonder if Ram always expected Jay to get away and just wanted to torment him.
Yeah, but then, I mean, why not just kill him? Why allow him to escape? This is someone who's already tried to have a coup against you. And there were 5 people who backed him in that corridor. If Ram hadn't turned up when he did, they would have forced their way into that room. There wasn't anything that Java could do. The numbers were not on her side. They had superior numbers. And there's another thing in this that I'm really frustrated that they never, ever really touch upon, which is that Techno gives Jay a zapper and says, you might need this. So he's tipping him off that not everything is as it seems. But also, Jay still has techno support in the building, and they never do anything with it.
No, they don't.
I mean, same with the chosen supporters of the Supreme Mother. We never get that angle. Yeah. We're never going to explore that, I'm afraid.
And it
could have been interesting, but...
Yeah, it could have definitely been interesting, especially since you already set up the technos as being so individual in their reasons for being there. They're not a hive mind. So it doesn't work when you have storylines where they just kind of go wherever the wind wants them to go, wherever the plot wants them to go. That's what they do. And it is interesting that they never actually utilize the support he has within the technos. Like, yeah, you can buy that as soon as they saw Ram was alive, they were like, oh, okay. So Jay, you were wrong. You know, he's here, so we're, you know, you're sorry, dude, you know, but at the same time, you can still have empathy for your old coworker who's been, you know, fired, quit, who the frick knows, and be like, hey, just a heads up, you may need protection out there, you know, we ain't that close, but I have a little bit of loyalty to you. I don't want to see something bad to you, so you might want to take this with you. but no, they don't do anything with it, unfortunately. They do turn the technos into a hive mind who just go along with everything, which is a shame.
Yeah, one would think that some of them would, you know, seeing as how Ram responds to Jay, they would have actually been afraid.
Yeah, Ram's taking a big gamble in using this as a way to get his technos back in line by showing them, I could do this to any of you because I could easily backfire, you know. But I do think it's in line with his ego and the control he thinks he has. I mean, this is the same guy who believes, I'm going to go into reality space and these people are going to take care of me for generations. You know, like he believes that for some weird reason. Even after this coup, he believes it, that everything's going to work out fine when he's under, you know. So I do think it does speak to the places he is stupid, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the execution, but I do like how Ram's thought process has come to this. Because, like, Yeah. Jay loves this city so much. He wants to build hospitals and education here. So having the city turn against him, that's going to punish you like way more than what I could do to you. So I get that. It's just, yeah, this whole game fake, then you're going to attack you in real life. That bit kind of throws me off. But yeah, I do like the way he got to this fort.
Yeah, especially with him having made Jay basically the public face of his whole operation.
Makes sense, yeah.
And if you're not going to kill off a character because you can't kill off a character, at least it's an attempt at bringing some tension into the story. You know, like at some age, you're going to think that Jay's in genuine danger. You know, if you're the right age watching this, you're going to be worried for Jay because, you know, he's walking into something cluelessly, having no idea he's in danger. Everyone around him knows he's in danger. He's the only one who doesn't know and won't have his guard up until it's too late, you know? And so a certain age group would definitely have been scared for him. So at least it does leave you with some lingering tension at the end of the episode. Jay is unknowingly walking into an ambush. Only the ambush is the entire city of crazy kids.
Including Pride.
Including Pride.
You could argue Pride is the crazy, most crazy of the crazy kids.
I love how Pride didn't hesitate to go on the hunt.
Oh, God. It just gets worse every week. You think he's reached the peak, but no, there's more work.
Right, what time did they even get to go run into the game? Like, obviously there's no headsets in the mall. Where did they both run to?
I have no idea where they went to get to the game, but they wasted no time.
No time at all.
I totally thought as well, you know, when Mace and Sammy are watching it on the computer, I thought Celine destroyed that computer with another computer.
There are so many in the mall.
Jack would have been so happy.
There's so many. Think about it. She destroyed one computer, but remember, that was one out of three that were being used at the same time.
I mean, I guess it does make sense that they do have computers, because at the time when, you know, the virus happened, like, the last thing you're going to steal is a computer when you don't have any electricity.
And don't forget, they set it up earlier when Mouse and Sammy, when the game and stuff was first introduced, they, like, got rid of a bunch of stuff in the mall to buy computer stuff. It's just like, I don't know how many computers are running around this mall, but there is a plethora, and Celine only thought to get rid of one in her rage.
Hey,
and
I always found it hilarious that in the beginning with the whole thing with Ellie, they confiscate Jack's computer.
I didn't think about that. Yeah,
I think that was just
computer was back. No, the exact same.
Yeah, but remember, in her captivity, she didn't use Jack's computer. They did at least put the effort into, she had to stay to smuggle in a laptop and stuff like that. I think they, you know, after all of that, when they brought back the same kind of computer that Jack had, they were just like, maybe people will think it was a popular type of computer at the time, and
it was
an easy one to find. So, but yeah, there's so many computers in the mall, apparently, and Celine didn't think to get rid of all of them, despite having a junkie, two of them living there. I just think you got two junkies in this mall, and everyone's agreed to help Pride and May stay away, and no one's going to use the game, but you still have them around, and the kids are able to see the announcement for the free game, and Pride's eyes lit up like he was like, free crack? I'm gonna go fetch some water. I'll be back.
Richie J was funny though.
Yeah. I like
virtual J.
Yeah, I like virtual J.
That Joker grin on his face. I'm like, oh, genuinely creepy.
He's all glitching out. Oh my goodness. What about Pride? How robotic he was in the game.
Yeah, that was odd. That was odd. I didn't get that directional choice.
I don't know what that was about. May's acting like her normal self when she's in the game, but not Pride.
And he's like, okay, I will kill you. Like, what's going on? Odd, yeah. I don't get that.
Would have been funny if that was one of the headsets that Celine attempted to destroy.
That would have been funny. That brings series 4, episode 43, to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and you can show your support by clicking on that like and subscribe and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast yourself. Just search for thetribe.co.uk or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation. Just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk. And we'll see you next time for episode 44. Until then, bye.
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 Bye.